You know, I've never made a Unity editor script before, and so actually I used ChatGPT to help me make the ChatGPT plugin for Unity. So
that's very meta. Yeah. I am here with Cameron Wills, whose artificial intelligence asset on the Unity Asset Store went to number one within a very short period of time of him launching it. Cameron, welcome to Building the Metaverse. Tell me a little bit about the asset you created for Unity. Like, what was the thought behind it? Why do you think it went to number one so fast?
Well, I knew that, you know, just being on Twitter so much, you know, you sort of get the front lines of the AI, you know, news that comes out. And it was such a viral topic. And then the first time I used ChatGPT, I was blown away myself with just how far AI had come. I mean, I had been following it, you know, with the release of DALL-E 2, and I was playing with that. And I just saw these tools coming out that were really cool. But ChatGPT really sort of blew me away. And then when I saw that they had an API that you can use that was relatively cheap, you know, my first thought was, you know, how can I use this to help me build my game? And so I went to the Unity Asset Store. It didn't exist yet. And that, you know, I'm big at looking for opportunities. And so I just knew that that would be a big thing, just because of how trending it was and, you know, how big Unity is as a game engine. The fact that there was no real easy integration of the two, it just made sense to just jump on it before anyone else.
What are some of the people that have downloaded and I understand a lot of people have bought it at this point. What do you know about how they're using it?
There's a couple people that have joined my Discord and have shown me some really cool scripts they've made. We had one person that had started building a tool that let him create game objects in the scene using, you know, the AI. He would, you know, give it some sort of prompt. And it was more so like a proof of concept, but he was just showing on how he was integrating it with other Unity tools and other, editor plugins and stuff like that help you make games. And, you know, my asset alone gives you the integration, but AI is so, you know, sort of open-ended that you could really use it to build a whole, you know, suite of things. And so really just seeing the way that other people are integrating it into other tools and coming up with ideas for how they want to use it in their game, for example, in like a quest system or something like that. I've seen, you know, all sorts of, it's only been live for 2 weeks, and I've already seen at least half a dozen really cool ideas come through.
So what's interesting about the asset, and if you're a Unity developer, you should just check it out. In the show notes, we'll have a link to it so people can find it easily. But there's a couple of elements to it. So there's building your game with the support of ChatGPT, but then also the game itself can include those generative AI elements actually in the game loop. Like you have this idea of like a character that can talk to you in the context of the game. Can you talk to maybe a couple of those different sides of where this technology plays in?
Yeah, so in my asset, there's two demos that are included that go over the two main use cases, which you just said, which is building the game and actually using it in the game. And so for building it, it's really like having a personal, you know, coding assistant that knows almost everything. And you can, there's really no dumb questions. You can ask it anything. It can actually create scripts for you, yeah, in your actual project. And there's even a sample where you can attach a existing script that you have in your game, and it'll actually read through the code of that script and give you tips on like, here's how I would improve it. Or if you say, hey, can you find the bug in the script? It'll analyze the code. And then once it gives you its suggestions, if you like those suggestions, you can just hit a button and it'll automatically overwrite that script for you and replace all the code with the suggestions. So that's just one example of many that you could come up with. But that was one that I included in the package. Mm-hmm. And then the other one that's also included, there are two in-game examples. One is it's basically a short little game where what you would imagine an NPC, instead of having, you know, a scripted conversation with it, you basically just program in by just telling it how you want it to behave. Like you can give it a personality. So for example, by default, I think I have it set to act as an angry pirate on like some quest or something like that. And so that's the sort of the personality that the AI was given. And then once you start the game and play the demo, you could talk to it. You could really ask it any question you want, and it's going to respond back in the same dialect as a pirate would have. And it's sort of going to play that role. And it just sort of acts as a demo to show how you can use this to create, you know, dynamic quests or, you know, one really good example I was thinking of creating a demo is like, for example, Star Fox, the old Star Fox game. While you're playing, you have the little characters that pop out and they will say little, you know, one-liners to you related to whatever the level is. Now with something like AI, you can basically make those conversations real time and dynamic. So you can now you can actually talk to your, you know, your crew, or your other players, AI players, and have real context-aware conversations that's not scripted, and it makes it a lot more personable. And there's also a demo that I included that is it serves as a translator. So, for example, you could think, you know, in say an MMO, you have players from all over the world that speak different languages. And generally, in most games, there's really no way to overcome that. I think Final Fantasy games have like a built-in sort of translator you could tab through and sort of pick and select words, but it's not really, you know, as the same as just having a conversation. But now with AI, you could basically have it so, say you had someone on the other side of the world that spoke Japanese, they could speak to you and they're, you know, in Japanese, in their native language, and the AI could automatically translate it for you into English. So when you receive the message, it's in English. And when you type in English, it goes to them, but the AI translates it into Japanese. So you can also use it for, you know, that's one really cool use case, I think, is you could basically have a open game, open world, and have players from all over the world that could all communicate with each other.
Yeah, the translation aspect is a really interesting idea. I'm also just imagining characters that remember your actions and reflect your gameplay back to you. Like we've seen that in games like Telltale games in the past where you get the so-and-so will remember that kind of comments. And it just seems like characters that actually understand specific things that you did and send that back to you as part of the narrative is an interesting thing. We saw recently this demo of someone doing automated commentary on like car racing games where it sounds like a sportscaster reviewing things. So like there's all these interesting aspects from a character standpoint. I want to return to the specifics of some of those big picture ideas, but let's maybe zoom the camera lens in a little bit, because when you built this asset for the Unity Asset Store, you know, you are a game developer as well. So a lot of the ideas that brought you to this were from your experience as a game developer. So share a little bit about the game that you've been working on and how did you become a game developer? How did you get into this? And then we'll come back to the AI a little bit, because I think this will be really interesting for people to hear who maybe they're tackling their first game and they're even thinking about like generative AI as a tool that could help make a better game or make the game more easily.
Yeah. So my story is kind of different, I think, because, you know, the game that I've been working on about 3 years. I started around the beginning of 2020, basically when the pandemic happened, just because I had so much free time. And really, I wanted to just learn programming in general, just because I know how valuable of a skill it is. But I thought I would be more likely to stick with it if I made a project I actually was interested in. And so that's how I sort of stumbled into game development. And then with Unity at that time, they had just acquired a third-party plugin called Bolt, but now they call it visual scripting. And it basically allows you to program visually with mm-hmm. nodes and stuff, so you don't have to use C#. And so that was really appealing to me, just because it was sort of an easier barrier to entry. And that's really what got me started. So when I started, I had no background experience in game development or programming. I was complete new, basically. I got Unity, got started with visual scripting, and now here we are 3 years later. And I would probably say about 95% of my game is actually built with visual scripting still. And I don't think there's any really published games out there that have used it. I don't think it was really intended to be used that way, but it's so capable that I was able to sort of put the pieces together and make a full, you know, cross-platform multiplayer game. And actually in that game, I was going to say I got started with the AI because 4 of the 5 characters that I have playable right now are actually, their voice lines are all AI generated. I have one character that I hired a freelance voice actor for, but for the other 4, we used AI, and you can't really tell the difference, honestly.
It's funny how often game development was essentially like the gateway drug into like becoming a coder. Like Elon Musk made a game as a kid. Steve Jobs worked at Atari before he started Apple. Like this story has been told over and over again. But a thing to think about is, well, how often was that because coding was a cool thing to do, and then you wanted to do games because that was the coolest thing to do with coding, or the true love of game making as an aspiration, and then you kind of had to learn computer programming? It sounds like from what you're describing, like you had an interest in becoming a programmer, but then before long you started discovering that, you know, game making was really awesome, and the visual tools and the various automations and whatnot that could accelerate you on the path was something that actually let you realize a creative vision more quickly. Am I kind of hearing that from
you? Yeah, I mean, I sort of grew up a gamer like a lot of kids did. And so, you know, I've always just had really a whole bunch of game ideas and stuff I wanted to make. And I've tried to get into programming through other ways, but, you know, making like a calculator and stuff like that just isn't interesting enough to really hold my attention. I don't know if it's the ADHD or what. But I needed whatever I work on for it to be something that is that I was actually interested in. And just by, you know, game development, it's like you said, I mean, it's programming. And so it really just sort of trains your mind to think programmatically. And now that, you know, I've worked on this game for so long, you know, I've learned C#, and I've learned that basically a lot of code languages are really similar. It's just like the syntaxes and stuff that are a little different, but if you can at least understand or train your mind to think programmatically, you could pick up other code languages pretty quickly, I think. And, you know, just messing around with the Unity editor, you know, I've never made a Unity editor script before. And so actually I used ChatGPT to help me make the ChatGPT plugin for Unity. So
that's very meta. Yeah. So how is this going to change game development if the future game makers out there are using tools like the plugin you made for Unity, and maybe that plus some visual scripting means maybe they're not going to code things at all? Because I've talked in some of my writing about this idea of the direct from imagination era, meaning like we're eventually going to have the holodeck, right? Maybe not the force feedback. I don't know. That requires some kind of science fiction that I don't know is necessarily possible. But getting to the point where you can just speak worlds into existence, say things, and then kind of sculpt it to the shape of the gameplay experience you want, it feels like we're on the frontier of that. And also it may even happen far faster than anyone expects. What are your own thoughts about that? Because you've now invested like 3 or 4 years of your life getting good at coding. Is that going to be something that you think people are going to keep needing here in the future?
Yeah, I think short term, it definitely is going to lower the barrier to entry. I mean, just Unity having the visual scripting tool lowered it enough for me to get into it. But now that they have, you know, Copilot, which can write code for you directly in the editor, mm-hmm. or in the IDE, and then, you know, My Asset and stuff like that. All these things are going to be, we're going to see a lot more game developers pumping out games. And we're already seeing that on Steam and stuff. The amount of indie devs is constantly, you know, the charts have been going up and up and up. I think this is going to have an exponential impact. And then in the long term, you know, maybe like a decade down, I definitely see there being a time where, you know, the same amount of time that it takes me to load up my PlayStation and go into the store and download a game and then play it, that same amount of wait time is going to be the same amount of time it's going to take for an AI to generate a whole game. So there's probably going to be a day where I'm going to be able to turn the PlayStation on and say, today I feel like playing a Call of Duty Zombies game, but in the style of, you know, Elden Ring or something crazy, whatever you could think of. And you basically just feed that into the AI and it's going to be able to generate that game for you. And I think the games that are going to really stand out really are going to be, you know, whoever has the most creative ideas and makes the most fun game from that. And then, you know, you'll be able to join in with your friends and other players into whatever game they generated. And that's sort of how, really, I think the day of the game developer is probably going to not be a thing here pretty soon. And kind of like the same way, if we look at something like web design, I mean, I know that still can be a craft, but nowadays, you know, 10 years ago, you needed to hire a web developer to make anything. And now you can use a bunch of drag and drop tools to build a complete, you know, website, or you got Shopify that can build a whole store for you. And so I think as things get easier, you know, we're just going to have more and more developers until it comes to the point where the tools are so easy, you know, there's really not going to be a need for big game development studios when AI can generate everything from the audio to the graphics to the gameplay itself and the code. So I think that's where we're headed in the long term.
Yeah, it seems to me that there's still going to be a important role for, you know, really interesting composition and people who come up with a story that people hadn't thought of. So I think eventually AI can do more or less anything that a human can, but I don't know what time frame that's going to take place on. But my sense is that, you know, people have really good artistic taste and good storytelling abilities. If they can just come together in small teams and create something that's an original game concept, that'll still have enormous value. But you're kind of jumping ahead to, you know, even a step beyond that, where like maybe it's the game player, right? Yeah. Then they think of what they want their experience to be, and they imagine something that's like their perfect game, and being able to just talk to an AI of some kind, have it do some kind of, you know, algorithm computation up in the cloud, then come back with that exact experience. That seems to be like you're jumping right to holodeck.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like sci-fi now, but if we look at how fast just AI has advanced in the last 10 years, I can imagine that it's definitely possible, probably another 10. That's might be right around the realm we'll be at by then, if not sooner. Things exponentially grow in tech, and it seems to only be getting crazier.
Well, I wrote this article just about a year ago now where computational creativity, this field of AI helping to make art, make narrative and stuff, was really just starting to look like it was going to move fast. And I wrote in this that, you know, within a decade, one person will be able to make an Elden Ring type game. And mostly people thought I was completely insane when I wrote this. But now, looking at the progress we've had in a year, the only insane part feels like, geez, 10 years seems like too long for that.
Yeah, it could be. And right now, really, like all the tools needed to do something like that kind of already exist. Right now, it seems like it's all programmers and developers scrambling, figuring out how to make all these tools work together. And I think it's going to be a very short time before we start seeing some more cohesiveness in that. And probably some brand is going to come out there that, you know, has a one-stop shop for AI that does everything all in one. OpenAI seems to be going that way with, you know, they released their Whisper API that handles audio to text, and they already got the AI part handled. And, you know, there's so many good text-to-speech that are really realistic, you know, sort of AI models out there. So I think all the pieces are there. You know, NVIDIA can generate frames on the fly in real time. So, you know, there's all these pieces. It's just a matter of putting them all together. And I think we'll see that.
On the text-to-speech, there's been things like 11 Labs. That seems pretty impressive. What have you seen that has worked well in that?
Yeah, I've been using, for my game, I use Replica. Okay. I think they call themselves Replica Studios. And they have a platform where basically they've trained over 100 different voices on the audio of real voice actors, is sort of, I guess, what they're trained it on. And really, you just type. And if you use the right punctuation and stuff, you can get all the proper inflections, and you can make it sound angry or sad, or you can change the tone and stuff. And so that's worked really well for me. But I have heard of 11 mm-hmm. Labs too. I haven't played with that one personally, but there are a lot of really good ones out there.
So yeah, in the show notes here, we'll definitely try to link a bunch of these so that people can check it out on their own, so that if you're a game developer and you want to speed up your process, you'll have a lot there. When we think about game development, there's such a huge scope of pieces that you need to bring into this. So we've talked about code, we've talked about some aspects of the creative process, like music, audio elements. When we talk about graphics, that's still a very complicated part of the process, because you can go to Midjourney today, for example, and get, in a lot of cases, 2D art that would be very good concept art for a lot of uses. It could even be art that you could turn into specific elements to put into your game. But when we start thinking about 3D graphics, that seems to be where a lot of the complexity comes in, because you got to go from concept art to model to texture mapping it to your UV unwrapping, your rigging and animating, and then you got to get it into a scene, and then the physics has to be right in the scene. So how fast do you see that whole 3D pipeline evolving, just based on you know, you've been in the thick of this looking at a lot of these tools that could help.
I think we're really close to it already. I think a lot of, like I was saying, a lot of the tools and pieces for this are kind of already in place. I can't remember the name of all of them, but I know that there's a tool out there right now that does text to a 3D model. But the way it does is it puts like these little like orbs at certain points, and the orbs sort of combine together and make the rough of a 3D object. So we're really close to just on that front alone. But then, you know, tools like Blender and things where you can do 3D rigging and animating and stuff. You know, all these tools are, a lot of them are open source, or they have third party plugins you can get. And there's people that are already working or releasing plugins for these other tools that will maybe use AI to automatically rig, and then another tool that, you know, AI that automatically animates. And so you get AI tools that handle one task really well. And then eventually you just, like I was saying, combine them all together, and then you have the full complete product. And so I don't think we're that far out from that. There's actually a few people that I follow on Twitter who have done a really good job in a short amount of time of using like Midjourney to make a character design. And then they basically superimpose that onto a 3D model, and they're able to create the mesh and basically have a whole 3D model done within an hour or two. And so really that's like the bottleneck, is we're waiting, you know, on those AI tools to come out that can automate that process of, now I have this image, I need an AI to take that image and turn it into a 3D model. And, you know, if a human could do it by, you know, doing mouse clicks, it's only a matter of time until we train an AI to do it and get them really good at doing it. So I think it's definitely coming.
Yeah, and we've spoken to M, the CEO of Scenario, already, and he would tell you that every one of these assets, everything in 3D is coming. They've focused on 2D thus far, but 3D graphics is on the way. We'll be talking to some other people who've been building the generative AI for these pieces, and UC, the guy who got kind of famous for a bit around this 3D graphics pipeline that he built with Unity and Blender and FSpy and some of these other elements, he's coming up on a future episode, so we'll be able to look at that. So all these pieces are coming together, and in some cases it just seems like the components have been created and are just not, you know, completely cohesive and linked. But if I had to guess, I'm guessing, you know, commercialization always takes a little bit more time, but it feels like it could be in the next year to 2 year time horizon where the tools get really, really mature. Maybe you even think it's a little closer than that, but that's what it feels like to me. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, just how fast we went from me just discovering about DALL-E 2 to then ChatGPT to now creating my own AI asset was like a small window, like three or four months. And that's just me, a noob that barely knows coding. So I already know that there's geniuses out there who, you know, would probably be terrified to get on camera so that they don't maybe have a huge following, but they're in the trenches working on something that would just blow our mind if we knew about it. And so I know it's coming quickly, especially I think this year, it seems like there's a lot of focus on audio. It seemed like last year there was a big focus on generating images. This year seems to be really focused around audio, and getting, you know, more realistic responses there, which we've already seen. We're only, you know, 3 months into the year. There's some really amazing tools dropping. So I definitely think within the year for sure that we'll see, we'll have a lot more tools to play with this time next year for sure.
What do you think of the commentary that exists out there that the kinds of things we're going to get back from generative AI, they're just sort of repackaging of things that people have already made. There's no originality in it. It's not going to be that interesting to actually interact with this. Like, people would say that's true of like ChatGPT output already.
I think it'll definitely get better. I could see why some people would say that, but as far as like the generative AI I've seen in like images and stuff like that, I mean, all artwork, I mean, there really is no original anything. Right. I mean, all artwork is inspired by someone else's art at some point. Like, it's very few cases where a person just comes into the existence and never sees any other piece of art, and everything is just all original ideas, and they weren't inspired by anything. And that's really what AI does, is it doesn't necessarily give you the same stuff. It's just, you know, it's inspired by whatever your prompts are, whatever your direction is, or whatever your creative thought is. And I look at it as just another tool. You know, it's just like a new paintbrush or a new Adobe Photoshop. It's just a new tool that artists can use to express their creativity. But the creative element is still, I think, always going to be there. And I haven't really seen any evidence that it's going to be bland, except maybe with ChatGPT in some instances. But I mean, that's more based on how that specific program was designed to function, and a lot of the filters, and there's certain things it can say and can't say. And I think even that will become open source and be a lot more creative here in the future. But it's such a powerful tool that you have to remember that they probably, you know, they have to sort of limit it to a degree, because we don't know how powerful this tool is. You know, Elon Musk has warned us already about AI for so long, and here we are just dropping it on the public. So I think there sort of has to be this little growing pains phase where we figure out what is right, what's not right, what's ethical, how can we make this thing work? You know, it could be most useful and still responsible.
The way you explore those problems is you do it in public. You don't do it, you know, behind closed walls where you don't even know what the heck is going on. So I think it's important to have the conversation and for people to do the experiments and work with this stuff, and that there's some reasonable transparency around it. But a moment ago, you kind of hinted at there's a scary element to AI doing all these things. Does all this technology, which you yourself are moving for, like you're literally, you put a Unity asset in people's hands so that they can start to do this stuff. Does it actually scare you a little bit? That
it definitely can. It really depends on who owns and who's releasing and who can profit off of these tools, because it's really, you know, they're the ones that really has the power. Like even with my asset, it's still at the end of the day, it's relying on the OpenAI sort of API, which, you know, now Microsoft controls. So it's really how they're choosing to filter and regulate it. But I mean, you think that, you know, if we drop something this powerful to the public, before we truly fully understand how it works and how it can be used, I could see how, you know, maybe just as a wild example, say a bank decides to now implement AI into their app or something like that, and they don't really realize, you know, how many things that AI has access to or what it could do. And it's hard to sort of think of all the use cases until you see them pop up, and then you adjust and correct. It really depends on how much control we give the AI and what we give it control of, because it's probably going to do things that we never thought of. And that's where we're going to have that sort of growing pains where we're figuring out, oh, maybe we shouldn't have let it do that or given it power to do that, because it, you know, we just don't know what we don't know. It's all uncharted territory. So
I guess you could say the same thing about social media, about the internet. You go back to the printing press. Like a lot of people were upset about the printing press putting too much power in individuals' hands to be able to like write and communicate whatever they want. So now we're putting the power of AI in people's hands as well. And of course, we don't know the full implications yet. But I'm a big believer in the power of individuals to do a lot over, you know, centralized powers. So I'm encouraged. Well, what are you most excited about? Like, as you think, you mentioned earlier, like what you thought it could change in terms of the industry, in terms of smaller teams, smaller groups, maybe even individual people doing things. You talked about the player someday being able to just speak a game into existence that they want to play. What do you want to do with all of this? Like, you've been building indie games on your own for now a few years. Like, how is this going to impact your own future?
Well, in the short term, definitely, it just, like I was saying earlier, how it just lowers the barrier to entry. Like the fact that I used it to help me make my asset. Without AI, I probably could have figured it out, but it probably would have taken me at least 3 times, 4 times longer to create something like that without any help and just sort of Googling and looking through forms and stuff like that. And so the biggest thing I see is just it lowers the barrier to entry for everybody, which kind of sucks for the people that, you know, went to school and got 4-year degrees and stuff like this in computer programming. And now, you know, your everyday Joe Schmo can come in and have AI hold his hand the whole way and he can make a game, you know, from scratch. So it kind of sucks for those people, but at the same time, it's a net positive, I think, because now, because the barrier to entry is lowered, more people can get into it, which means we're going to see the execution of more really great ideas. You know, there's tons of people that have really amazing ideas, but maybe didn't have the skill set to create those. And now with AI, we're going to see a lot more of that. With more people entering the space, means we're going to see some really cool, you know, software coming out. That's really going to change everyone's lives. And that wouldn't have happened if the barrier to entry wouldn't have been lowered, I think, or it would have happened a lot slower. And so I think we're going to see a rapid acceleration of just really useful tools coming out that are going to save a lot of people time, money, and it's just give everyone a better life in general. You know, all these tools end up being something that either makes somebody money or saves people time or provides value in some way. And so I think we're just going to see a lot of value flooding the market, which everyone's going to benefit from.
For years, one of the things that I've heard over and over again, to the point that it's like a cliche trope, is like, you know, ideas aren't worth that much. Execution is everything. And one of the ideas that I've been playing with is just, well, maybe AI changes that a little bit. Maybe the idea is going to be a lot more valuable in the future, that if you have that stroke of brilliance where it's like, nobody's tried this particular combination before or this set of mechanics. If you can go right from your head to the game that becomes playable so much more fast, then we're not in this world where you have to come up with, you know, millions and millions of dollars, convince a publisher or a venture capitalist or whoever to bankroll an idea. And it's always harder to fund an idea that hasn't exactly been tried before, especially if you yourself don't have tons and tons of background having built something like that in the past and made people lots and lots of money. Maybe in the future, the idea actually will be what's super valuable, and you'll be able to get that idea, bring it to life, and then if people love it, that becomes an opportunity for the idea person.
Absolutely. And it sort of applies a lot to my game too, because not only is the barrier to entry there with the coding aspect, but even like the you know, creating a game has so many different disciplines all wrapped into one, and you wear so many different hats. Not only do you have to program the game, but then you have to come up with, like I said, the voice acting, which I used AI for. You have to come up with the concept art, which now you can use AI for. Soon the graphics and the 3D models, all these different components that, you know, if you couldn't figure it out yourself or didn't have the time to learn 10 different disciplines in your short life, you'd have to, you know, outsource and hire a freelancer or somebody to help you. And then you run into the sort of ceiling of, you know, do you have that funding available to just blow on your idea to do these things? And so there's so many more barriers to entry that have been lowered by AI that cover across the whole spectrum, that are just going to save people so much time and money, and that we're going to be seeing indie games popping out really quick, because you can generate so much of the stuff that used to take you so long, and now you can actually focus on the idea and the creative element more so than the execution. Just like you were saying, it's definitely going that route.
And we have examples from the industry of even individual creators making amazing things. Like Stardew Valley took like 5 years to build, but one person made it. There's Toby Fox with Undertale. He made basically everything in the game. Those are incredibly talented people who could master so many of the different tasks. And it took a lot of time, right? Like to do that, to make all those elements for a game, also just required incredible determination over a long period of time. So totally to be celebrated. It's actually the way the game industry, when I was first building games, was actually structured. Like most game teams were smaller teams, and it was maybe like a really talented programmer / designer with a really good artist, and then you bring in someone who would do music and sound effects and things like that. But that was able to create like a very successful game back in the day. So we might be getting back to that again, where everyone can be that kind of team, or everybody can aspire to make the kind of game, or even with higher production values, perhaps, than what Toby Fox was able to pull off in Undertale. So we're opening up the ability to be creative and do game making to a massive number of people.
Exactly.
Cameron, what did you learn about game making from your, albeit, you know, relatively short still history building games? What should other aspiring game developers, what should they know about this?
Oh man, I probably said number one thing, it is hard. It's probably the hardest thing I've ever done. Like, you have to really love what you're working on. You know, if you ever plan to stick through to the end. There's been so many times really where I've just wanted to quit, but I've just had I put so much time in, it's like it can't go back now. Or it's the fact that I've promoted it for so long, I have so many people wanting to play it, that more so than to not let them down and just to see it through to the end. It's a really tough thing. It's a lot easier now. I think, you know, before, if you wanted to make a game or a game studio, you needed to find and hire people locally. I think it's a lot easier and cheaper now because you can outsource things to the internet and places like Fiverr and stuff like that. So you could still relatively cheap get a lot of the things you need, from art to music and stuff like that. And definitely AI is going to help that come down even further. But I mean, I would say, one, it's really hard, but it's definitely possible. You can do it. I mean, I've done it, and I knew absolutely zero when I started. I built up a community of people that really want to play this game. And so it's definitely can be done.
It's really, really hard, but also making a great game that people love is probably always going to be hard in a lot of ways. But I think there was a really interesting lesson in what you described, which is, if you got an idea for a game and you're going to go for it, you should let people see what you're working on. Like, you should, like, it's one thing if you're Blizzard and you can keep things under wraps for 6 years and not tell anybody about it. We're not all Blizzard, right? We don't have the infinite runway and huge, huge teams to throw at ideas and to iterate and polish until things are ready. For the rest of us mere mortals that might have an idea for a game, like, building your community up, as you were saying, like the people in your Discord that you're communicating with, like, that seems like really important. It's what I've called, like, shots on goal. Like, you got to learn from your audience and try.
Exactly. And before I got into the game development, I've probably the last 10 years before that done all marketing. So I do have a background in marketing. And that's really the biggest thing, is you really can't build in silence unless there's like a reason, like you're Blizzard and you're specifically trying to for some reason, but otherwise it's going to hurt you. You want people to see what you're working on. The sooner the better, because you start to build a following and people relate to you personally, the developer, and they're, even if they're, maybe it's not their favorite genre of game, people relate to that struggle, or that, you know, that start to just, they just like seeing that it can be done, that somebody who knows nothing can build something, and they want to see how that process happened. And that's what more people can relate to. And they'll buy your game or support you in other ways just through that. And that sort of word of mouth is marketing in and of itself. So even if you're just starting today, I would start your stream today as well and show, you know, it's going to be cool, you know, once you finish your game and you have footage, you can go back 3 years ago and look, here's the first day I ever started. Here's the first line of code I ever wrote. And now here's the end product. It sort of builds content for yourself, because now, like, even on my streams on my Twitch, I have hundreds and hundreds of hours of me live streaming my game with zero viewers. And it's literally just me there talking to myself about what I'm doing, showing what I'm working on. There's all of my struggles of me not being able to figure out, you know, really basic things like loops, and, you know, at the very beginning. And then you can sort of see that progression. And so, say, you know, best case scenario, this game blows up and ends up being really popular. Now I have hundreds of hours of content I can now go back and chop up and make videos for years to come, of just showing, you know, that process. And at the end of the day, that's what, you know, a lot of people are going to relate to, and being able to see that full transparency, you know, because especially as an indie game, you know, a game is still at the end of the day a business, and you still have to figure out how you're going to make money and X, Y, and Z. And so if you're a lot more transparent, if people see you're not some money hungry, you know, corporation that's trying to put, you know, pay to win mechanics in your game and stuff, that you're just an indie dev trying to keep the lights on so you can keep making this cool game. I think that it helps a lot too in people wanting to support you. It builds a lot of trust. They see you're a real person. And it's just, there's nothing but positive benefits to showing, you know, your process early.
You're an indie game developer, and now you are supporting the entire game development ecosystem with assets that you're putting onto the Unity Asset Store. I'm curious, what's a day in the life of Cameron Wills?
Oh man, right now it's waking up to at least half a dozen emails of people trying to figure out how to set up the asset, which is really just feedback for me that tells me maybe I could figure out a way to make the setup process easier. So it's all just improvement. And then at this point, you know, I try to find out what I can work on for the day, and I sort of just prioritize, because I obviously want to. I never planned on being an asset developer or anything like that. I just thought it would be a useful tool that other people would find useful, so I made it. But really, my main focus is my game. And so I was working on it full time until I basically ran out of savings to keep the lights on. And so now I part-time bartend, and whenever I'm not at work, I'm grinding away at my game, trying to, you know, I'm at the finishing stretch. It's playable now. And it's really close to being ready. I'm just really dotting the I's, crossing the T's, squashing a couple of bugs and getting some final feedback. So really I spend, like I said, if I'm not at work, I'm at home working on my game or replying to emails and figuring out how I can improve upon this asset.
Well, there you go. It's really hard to make a game.
Yeah.
It takes a struggle, it takes a long time. Not everything goes the way you want. Sometimes you have to find alternative forms of funding along the way, even if that means a part-time job to keep things going.
Yep.
Well, Cameron, this has been really interesting. It's really encouraging to see someone who's been at it for a few years as you have, started with no idea of like how to code, according to you. Yeah. And along the way, you figured it out. You put a game together. Definitely check out the game that Cameron's been working on. We'll put that in the show notes. You can find a link to it there. Check out his asset in the Unity Asset Store. If you're just curious even about what ChatGPT and some of these LLM-based technologies can do.
Absolutely. And I just wanted a little side note. As of right now, my asset's actually number 2 in the asset store of all the assets. So out of 83,000, out of 83,000, it's number 2 right now. So people really like it. And AI seems to be a thing.
Thanks, Cameron. So happy to hear of all your success that you've had with the asset. Number 2 overall in the asset store is incredible. That's a hell of a lot of downloads.
Yeah.
Number 1 in the AI category, of course. So we're going to be keeping an eye on what you're doing. I'm going to be watching what you're doing, both the game as well as the asset.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.